This is a traditional spiritual performed by the Robert Shaw Chorale, conducted, of course, by its namesake, Robert Shaw. His recording from back in 1958, 1961, which also contains a lot of music by Stephen Foster. It's one of those wonderful classics. It's actually called the Stephen Foster Songbook, and I played it because the Chorale, a choral group based in Champaign-Urbana, is going to be doing a number of spirituals in Robert Shaw and Alice Parker arrangements at their concert coming up this weekend, and we'll be talking about that in just a moment. Later on Live and Local today, I'll be talking with cellist Jay Campbell, who's a very young fellow who last year won the Concert Artists Guild Victor El Male competition, first prize winner in that competition. And he's coming to the Krannert Center in Urbana for a recital this coming Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock with pianist Connor Hanick. I'll be talking with Jay Campbell, who has a particular interest in all kinds of new music involving the cello. That'll be later on Live and Local today. This show is your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly. And for the first half of the program, I've actually got two guests, both of whom are involved in this weekend's concerts by the Chorale, which are happening in a new location there at First Methodist Church in Urbana. Usually they play in Champaign. Their music director is Julie Byler. She is with me. And a fellow who could almost be called the other music director in a way, or at least he's the principal guest conductor of the Chorale. His name is Craig Jessup, was for a long time with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, excuse me. And he is making his, fifth?
Five.
With the Chorale.
Principal guest conductor, I like that.
You like that?
Yes, that's good.
Craig Jessup is with us also on the line. Thanks very much for joining us today.
I'm honored to be here. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Craig.
Well, we have everybody together, and are you on the road right now?
I actually made it to my home, so I'm here at home. So it worked out perfect timing.
Congratulations. So I know I asked you this last time we had you on the phone, Craig, but I'm going to ask you again for those who didn't get to hear that particular interview. And because you've had a subsequent appearance with the Chorale and your answer may have modified a little bit, but tell me some of the things that appeal to you about this particular choir that brings you back to them every once in a while.
Well, first of all, you cannot say no to Julie Byler. She is a most talented, gracious, wonderful woman, an amazing conductor, very dedicated to the choral art and to the singers who produce that art, and has become a very dear friend. And I keep asking her, really, you want me back? And she keeps saying yes, and I have such a great time. The singers are wonderful. She does an amazing job with them. When you consider it's a non-auditioned, all-volunteer choir, it's an amazing thing. So I love coming, and I'm honored to return.
And Julie, maybe you can tell me what some of your singers have said over the years, because you have, I think, a large number of singers who are very regular with the Chorale over a long period of time. Some of the things that they have found, particularly that they have learned from Craig Jessup over his various appearances.
What I can tell you is every time he leaves, the Chorale has set themselves a new level. They've raised the bar, and he's the reason. And we have had other guest conductors. They very much enjoyed Renee Clausen here and Alice Parker, but he speaks my language, but in his tone of voice. And they love listening to him. They love doing things for him. He has this way of very exacting demands and doing it with a velvet glove, if you will. So I learn a little bit, too, when he comes. But we share, I think, what choral sounds should be and how to go about getting them. And for me, it's like a booster shot for your, tetanus or whatever. 31 years I've been doing this, and as you know, repertoire is often a problem or certainly a conundrum year after year. And as Craig said, we've become friends, and he has invited the chorale out there twice now to sing with his group, the American Festival Chorus. And we've had wonderful times. So as far as I'm concerned, principal guest conductor is a great title, and it's not over yet.
Well, I'm very honored.
You mentioned repertoire can be a challenge to choose music for, well, really any choral group, but of course you have been with the group, Julie, for so long that you know it very well. And you are doing some songs that I think that the chorale knows very well, or at least the style very well. You've done a lot of arrangements by Robert Shaw and Alice Parker over the years. And a lot of this program on Saturday is going to be some of those arrangements of spirituals, particularly African-American spirituals, and especially those that were that are on a recording that Robert Shaw conducted with a group called the Robert Shaw Festival Singers of the Ohio State University, if we must know the whole title. And among the distinctive facts about this recording is that Craig Jessup was in the baritone section for these recording sessions and on the recording, which leads me to ask Craig, tell me a little bit about what it was like to work with Robert Shaw.
It was choral heaven. There's no one like him. I doubt there ever will be anyone like him. In American choral music, for me, he simply was the best. He set the highest standard, and it wasn't just his superb musicianship. It was a holistic approach, theologian, scholar, philosopher, poet. I never knew anyone who had a better command of the English language than Robert Shaw, and he was just an amazing musical and spiritual force. And those who had the great privilege of coming under his influence just could never forget it. I sang in the Festival Singers for 10 years, the festivals in France and the festivals at Carnegie Hall, and they were life-changing, not only musically but personally, to work with that great man.
You said that he, I forget exactly how you put it, but he knew the English language better than anybody else. And of course, we all speak English very well, but you meant something different than that. Can you?
Mr. Shaw had a command of the written and spoken word, unlike very few Americans that I know of. There may be others, they're British Englishmen, but for an American, Mr. Shaw had an amazing control of the written and spoken language. He would go home after every rehearsal and write a letter to his singers. That this is before the days of email, and then his faithful assistant, Nola Frink, would type it up and send it out. And the collections of those letters are priceless. Some of them have been put in a book. Robert Blocker, the dean of the Yale School of Music, was very close to him, and Mr. Shaw left his archive to Robert and the Yale University Music Library, and he published a book of those letters. Another book was published earlier called Dear Friends, and everything imaginable are in those letters, always dealing with the rehearsal and how it can be better, but always branching out into philosophy. It's an amazing resource. I read them all the time, even to this day.
It sits by my computer, and I'm often amused to read that he was frustrated when people didn't come to rehearsal or when things weren't going so well. And so it's a comforting thing.
You mean Robert Shaw had to actually deal with people not coming to
rehearsal?
I
do believe that's what I read, yes.
Like all the rest of us. Yeah, that's a whopping frustration. Well, I was actually going to, I mean, Julie, you just said you have the book of letters next to you, and Craig, you said you read it every day. And I guess my follow-up to that is, what do you take from those letters and apply to your rehearsals with your groups?
Well, for myself, you know, Robert Shaw always speaks, again, like Craig said, his father was a preacher to begin with, and so I think he must have been raised in a home where the language was just exquisite. And he speaks in very plain terms when he talks to the singers. He very seldom, but sometimes, apologizes for his behavior at rehearsals. And he talks about, as I said, attendance and what in the world people can think they can learn if they're not there. And he just has, it's entertainment reading as well as for anyone, but certainly for a musician or a conductor, it is the choral Bible, kind of, I would say.
And Craig, what sort of things have you picked up and in turn passed along?
Well, I can tell you, for every major work of music, and this last summer we did the Beethoven Missa Solemnis here, and Julie brought some of her singers and sang it with me. He probably performed that more than any conductor alive. I mean American or European. He loved the work. He was like an evangelist for the Beethoven Missa Solemnis. And just the collection of letters to the Atlanta Symphony Chorus prior to the recording of that with Telarc are a window into the score study and preparation of Missa Solemnis. And that, coupled with his scores, I don't know of anyone who marked scores in more detail, more faithfully, than Robert Shaw. Bear in mind, he was apprenticed with Toscanini in the NBC Symphony and George Zell in the Cleveland Orchestra. So I don't know that anyone knew or understood the choral orchestral repertoire better than Robert Shaw. Whenever I have a major work, I'll go to Yale and I'll get out his score and pore over it. We did a Benjamin Britten War Requiem. I did it last March at the ACDA National Convention in Dallas, and then the year before that here in Utah. And that score study, looking at his mind in that score, was invaluable preparation for me.
I'm also struck with the fact that he talks about the word amateur. And, you know, when...
In loving tones.
Yes, in very loving tones. But sometimes it's used slightly deprecating. But for him, amateur just meant to sing for the love of singing. And it didn't by any means diminish the group at all, if it were an amateur group, which speaks to me.
It's interesting. The Robert Shaw Chorale was a professional corps of singers from the 50s up through the late 60s. But once he started in the symphonic chorus repertoire in Cleveland and then his many years in Atlanta, he would not hire any singers in his choruses. It was all amateur, and he became quite a vocal champion for the all-volunteer chorus. That's why he loved the Tabernacle Choir and frequently conducted the Tabernacle Choir. And he said in his mind, the amateur volunteer choir is the greatest metaphor for democracy at work.
We chose this program mostly because Craig had done these, and we were just bandying about what we might do this fall when he's here. And he handed me, I can attest to the marking of the scores, because he handed me, I think, about 17 of these spirituals that were marked, I'm sure, when you were singing it, Craig.
We recorded it on a Telarc CD called Amazing Grace. He went back, did sort of a retrospective of his many years with the Robert Shaw Chorale, and we recorded it, I don't know, gosh, can't even remember what year. It would have been around 1990, 91. And I normally you just transcribe your own markings, the bass baritone markings, but I'm a bit of obsessive, compulsive, addictive choral guy, and I copied everything into my scores, and I haven't regretted it, because it's a study. It's a study in diction. You should also know it was really Fred Waring who discovered Mr. Shaw out in California and brought him to New York to be his assistant with the Pennsylvanians. Fred Waring and the Pennsylvanians, when they were broadcasting on the NBC radio network. And diction was his, he just was a slave to projecting diction over the radio. And so a lot of those markings have to do with nuance of text.
We've got, you know, you said we were familiar with some of these. Well, I will tell you that none of the ones that Craig is conducting were we familiar with, and diction is prime. So, Well, be ready.
for the record, this recording, Amazing Grace, American Hymns and Spirituals, was recorded in 1992. So, Craig, you were very close.
Okay.
And let's listen to Craig's diction along with the rest of the Robert Shaw Festival singers, led by Robert Shaw, from this recording. This is one of the spirituals that will be on the concert by the chorale this coming Saturday, which will be co-conducted by my guests today, Julie Beiler, who's music director of the group, and Craig Jessup. This is called I Got Shoes. Traditional spiritual called I Got Shoes, and with Robert Shaw leading his festival singers from their CD called Amazing Grace, American Hymns and Spirituals, and quite a number of these will be performed by the chorale based in Champaign-Urbana on Sunday night at 7 o'clock. I think I said Saturday earlier, but Sunday night at 7 o'clock at a new location for them, which is First United Methodist Church in Urbana on South Race Street. That's the one right next to Lincoln Square Mall. Or I guess they call it Lincoln Square Village now or something like that. And my guests are Julie Beiler, who's music director of the chorale, and also Craig Jessup, formerly of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, and he's now at Utah State University. You are still there, right?
I am indeed, yep.
And he is with us here on Live and Local here on FM 90.9, where our program is made possible with the support of the Friends of WILL and in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, an agency of the state of Illinois. This is, as you like to say, Julie, a festival weekend for the chorale. What does that mean?
Well, in the past, when Craig has come, we have invited others to join us, but this year we're taking him all to ourselves. So there'll be 72 of us on the risers. Most of 99.9% of them are chorale members all year long. So, but festival is different than concert, as Craig always likes to say. You come in and you work as hard as you can until it's time to perform, and then you perform. And the object isn't necessarily perfection, but it's just the joy of preparation and being the very best you can be. And he's great at that.
And mostly, well, I should ask, are you sharing duties conducting the spirituals, or is one you're going to do one and then one do the rest of the program?
We chose eight spirituals. I chose eight out of those 17. And then, so the first half will be that, and a former young artist winner, Davion Williams, will come to sing Ride On King Jesus and a couple other spirituals. And then the second half of the program will be American hymns. So I will conduct two. One of them is by a young man named Dan Forrester. And it's quite new, and it's a response to the death of a young child, his niece. And the other hymn that will start the second half of hymns is a Stephen Paulus number, Pilgrim's Hymn. And then Craig will go ahead and take the rest, and I get to listen or maybe sing. I don't know.
Which is, well, why not sing, right?
Well, yes.
Do a little of both. That is a special treat. I have one really mundane question for you, Craig. When you worked with Robert Shaw, was he still always wearing the blue shirt?
Absolutely. It was the long sleeve silk blue and then a white towel, and he had two or three of those shirts identical, because whenever we take a break, he was perspiring so heavily he had to go change.
I think that must be a common denominator among conductors.
The sweat part?
Oh, yes.
Or maybe the blue shirt, because I think James Levine has often done that too. Well, that's pretty mundane, but in any event, I've sung with him myself a couple of times, and it certainly is a treat, and it'll be a great treat to hear, at least in part, what a lot of what Robert Shaw taught Craig Jessop, and he will pass that along as well as what he has learned on his own, so to speak.
Which is why we need all day Saturday for preparation.
All day Saturday.
Not concert till Sunday.
The concert starts at 7 o'clock Sunday night, First United Methodist Church. It's The Chorale, based in Champaign-Urbana. It's a free concert, but they do note that donations to benefit their Young Artist Scholarship Fund are always welcome.
Just let me say one last thing, and that is our accompanist, Dr. Michael Hammer, is also playing in the second half some of his own arrangements of old hymn tunes, and you don't want to miss him.
Wonderful. He's a fine pianist and organist. Julie Beiler and Craig Jessop, thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local today.
Thank you,
Thank
Kevin.
You.
See
Bye.
You soon.
And here is the music that one of the pieces that Julie just mentioned is by Stephen Paulus. This is called Pilgrim's Hymn, and it is performed by the chorale under her direction. Music by Stephen Paulus, Pilgrim's Hymn, performed by the Chorale based in Champaign-Urbana. Julie Beiler, their music director, was conducting that live performance. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. here on FM 90.9, where we have support from the Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana, open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. More information is available at 359-7377. Stay tuned next for a conversation with cellist Jay Campbell, who is coming to the Krannert Center in Urbana Sunday afternoon for a recital. This is him in a performance of the final movement of Debussy's Sonata for Cello and Piano. That is some of the final movement of the Sonata in D minor for cello and piano by Claude Debussy, in performance by cellist Jay Campbell, who is coming to the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts at the University of Illinois in Urbana for a recital this coming Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in the Follinger Great Hall there. He is the 2012 winner of the Concert Artists Guild Victor. And it occurs to me, I'm not sure how you say this last name, so I'll just ask Jay, because he's with me on the phone right now. How do you say the name of the last name of this fellow?
El Male.
I should have made a guess.
El Male, yeah.
That's what I would have said. Well, in any event, thanks very much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's a really eclectic program that you're bringing to the Krannert Center. You've got Beethoven, Debussy, the piece we just heard a sample of, Stravinsky, his suite Italienne, and then a U.S. premiere of a piece by a fellow named Matthias Pinscher, and then a piece written for you by John Zorn called Occam's Razor just this year. And this seems to be pretty typical of your programs. Tell me a little bit about how you see the cello these days, and why it's important to, I guess, in connection, why is it important to be playing as much new music as you do?
Well, I mean, at the most basic level, I think it's important to present a varied program. I mean, I think programming a recital can be just as important as how you play on it. I think both are fairly related. I mean, I think rather than just throwing out a grab bag of pieces for people to hear, maybe to try to craft some sort of, you know, abstract narrative from beginning to end and hopefully tell some sort of story. And I think that also pieces can be heard differently in context of the other pieces. And, you know, I think putting old pieces next to new music is a really great thing. I've had the experience before playing the Debussy Sonata next to a piece of Charles Warren where someone has come up from the audience afterwards and sort of noted that the Debussy actually sounds very modern when it's put in the right context next to contemporary music. And I like that part of it. And also about playing contemporary music, I think it's just important to, you know, continue the tradition and play new works and expose it as much as possible and not really, you know, segregate it to a new music concert, which is often attended by people who are aficionados of, and, you know, connoisseurs of new music. But it's good to get it out there in, you know, a standard recital where people who wouldn't go and seek it out have the opportunity to hear it, unsuspectingly, whether they want it or not. I think it's good to give them the opportunity to hear it and they can decide whether they like it.
You're finished your bachelor's degree at the Juilliard School. You're involved in, you're working on your master's. You haven't finished that yet, have you?
No, I'll be done this May.
Which sort of implies that you're a pretty young guy. And do I read correctly here that you have already premiered close to 100 works?
Yeah, in various contexts, not all solo works, but around there in chamber ensembles, you know, reading through different versions of new pieces for, you know, to help a composer out, sort of almost like workshopping it. But yeah, it's something I'm very involved with and very interested in, and something that I've tried my best to occupy a large part of my time.
Yeah, that's pretty apparent. Let me just ask, sort of generally speaking, and it might sound like kind of an absurd question because it is so new music is so wide-ranging. In general, what are some of the things that appeal to you personally about playing pieces that are outside of the cello canon, so to speak?
Well, I think one of the exciting things about doing a lot of new music is that when you get sent the score for the first time, you really don't know what to expect. I mean, when you're playing a new piece by a composer who you've played already, you could sort of have an idea, but, you know, these are all new ideas, and composers are always trying new things. So every piece that you do, and especially if it's brand new, there's no, you know, there's no precedent there. You can't go out and listen to the recording. You have to sit there and figure it out yourself, and every time it's different, which is always nice. I don't think that I could be the kind of player that could play, you know, the same pieces hundreds and thousands of times, even though I think when you do that, you get to a certain relationship with the piece that, you know, it becomes very deep, and you know the piece inside and out, and that's great. But I sort of like exploring new things as sort of rapidly as I can, and that's just my, I don't know, maybe that's just me. But one great thing is when you have the opportunity, when you have a piece like, for example, John Zorn's, which I played for the first time the end of September, to be able to play it over and over again, and to sort of try to build that relationship with a new piece that you get when you really, you know, study a, like a Brahms score and keep on performing it over and over again, and see how much that that piece can hold up to that kind of time commitment. You know, sometimes you'll play pieces multiple times and you'll have a conviction that this actually, you know, this piece maybe doesn't have that spark that, you know, like maybe a masterpiece has. And maybe you retire, you bring it back later, and some pieces you'll realize, you know, you could just keep playing it over and the score reveals more and more of itself the more you play it. And that's sort of one of the great things about it. You never know what kind of gems you might find for going through all these new pieces that a lot of people don't touch. You know, so you end up wading through a lot of things. You won't end up performing a lot. And then you find, you know, special ones that you can try your best to champion them and bring them around and play them for as many people as you can.
Well, here is a piece that I would say, at least of the samples of your playing that I've heard, is one of the tamer, newer pieces. It's by a Pulitzer Prize-winning composer named David Lang. And this is a movement, I mean, I don't know this whole piece at all. This is a movement called I Lie from a larger piece called Labyrinth Within.
Thank you.
Music by David Lang. It's called I Lie from Labyrinth Within. The cellist is Jay Campbell. He's coming to Urbana for a recital Sunday afternoon. He's my guest this portion of Live and Local. Do you think that doing newer pieces, sometimes brand new pieces, informs your performances of some of the more, you know, classic pieces? For example, on the program you're doing variations from a very well-known aria from Mozart's Magic Flute. You mentioned earlier that a listener came up to you after a recital and said it helped him or her hear a Debussy piece differently. What about your performances of, say, Beethoven?
Oh, I think without question. I think putting them next to each other, it's sort of... my whole approach is... There's something that Robert Mann of the Juilliard, formerly of the Juilliard Quartet, used to say, where he wanted to play old music like it's new and new music like it's old. And when he was playing them in, they were premiering quartets all the time, and they really championed the quartets, Ellie Carter, Milton Babbitt, all this kind of stuff, and they would mix it up. And they have such an original take on the classics that I can't think that they don't inform each other. And you know, just purely from a practical level, so much contemporary music is extremely difficult. So I think that all of the technical sides of playing cello that I've worked on, I would say 95% has come from working intensely on contemporary pieces, just because you often have to just do so many crazy things, and if you want to do it with any reliability, it really has to be really practiced in a meticulous way.
Well, I was going to ask whether the teachers you've worked with at Juilliard are able to work with you on newer music. Do they tend to have the similar commitment as you do, or do you have to kind of convince them to work with you on some of this stuff?
You know, it's funny because I study with Fred Sherry, who is, he's sort of like a legend of contemporary music. He's a champion of Elliot Carter, Milton Babbitt, Lucas Foss, John Zorn, all these composers. Any composer will know Fred Sherry. And I actually originally went to go study with him after high school because at that point I realized what I really wanted to do with contemporary music, but that's what really excited me. And when I got there, the funny thing is maybe for the first year or so we worked on a lot of contemporary music. And then after that, and I'm still studying with him 5-6 years later, most of what we do actually is old music, because he has such an interesting approach to old music that is very much his own and informed by his experience with contemporary music, that most of our time is actually spent going through Beethoven, Brahms, and then also just sitting down and listening to non-cello music also. We sit down and listen to Mozart quartets, we listen to piano concertos, whatever, and we do a lot of talking and just milling over scores. And it's old music. He's obsessed with Bach because he was obsessed with Schoenberg. I think maybe we had a similar experience where we worked our way backwards. The first thing that really grabbed me was things like Bartok Quartet and Stravinsky. And then going backwards, what influenced them? How did that manifest in their music?
Well, let's hear an example of old music. This is by Johannes Brahms. You mentioned him a bit ago. It's a slow movement from his cello sonata number 2. They didn't indicate to me, your agent, where this performance was from. Do you happen to know who the pianist is with you?
Yeah, this was performed at the Juilliard School back in 2010, I think. Yeah, 2010. And I was playing with a classmate of mine, a really amazing pianist named Konstantin Balianatos.
And I'll probably ask you to remind listeners of that again when we come back after some of this movement, beautiful movement, beautifully played by cellist Jay Campbell, who's coming to the Krannert Center in Urbana Sunday afternoon. It's music by Johannes Brahms, slow movement of his second cello sonata. Jay Campbell, the cellist, with pianist Konstantin, tell me his last name again.
Valianatos.
And the pianist who will be with you on Sunday afternoon, Connor Hanick, does he say his name?
Yeah, Connor Hanick.
Connor Hanick. They'll be at the Kranitz Center, the recital Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Music by Beethoven, Debussy, Stravinsky, John Zorn, and Matthias Pincher. Tell us a little bit about the John Zorn piece named Occam's Razor.
Well, this past year or two, I was lucky to meet John Zorn and start playing with him. We went on tour this summer, and he's a maniac. He's a really wild man who writes crazy music. And he's been writing a lot. I mean, he's most famous for being a jazz musician and, an avant-garde jazz musician. And he's been writing more and more classical music. It's totally crazy music. And I think he's been on a kick recently where he really wants to refine his composition, where he's only writing what's absolutely necessary, hence Occam's Razor. And so he's written a set of canons and interludes. So every canon between the cello and the piano is set at a different interval, like the Goldberg Variations, for example. And so he's restricted himself to this very strict compositional framework. And it's interesting because he uses that to generate like total chaos and mayhem, which is really fun to play.
Jay Campbell will be with pianist Connor Hanick Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at the Kranert Center in Urbana for a recital. He's winner of the Concert Artist Guild Victor El Male competition, and as such is making the tour. He's going to be playing a particularly interesting and varied program. This is a piece by a Polish composer, Witold Ludosławski, an excerpt from his cello concerto in which Jay Campbell is performing with the Juilliard Orchestra. Jay, thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to coming by.